Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Irving finds room. Jackson the rebound. Ahead is Caldwell Pope. Perfect pass and a flush. Dellavedova finds Irving for three. Oh, he puts it in. Kyrie Irving nails it. Kyrie Irving, what a shot and a perfectly executed play.
Clearly got it off in time. Give Tyronn Lue a lot of credit. This is a designed play.
In the opening game, and a three-pointer hit by Marcus Morris. Turns it over. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope delivers it right to Morris. All kinds of time, and he delivers the three. Crowd into it. Now James on a breakaway. All the way in. LeBron vintage. Chance for the final shot here as the Pistons are down two. Harris turns, gets to the rim. Tobias Harris with a big third quarter. All tied at 78. It's kind of, it goes. And it goes. Kyrie Irving. With a half-court bomb.
This is not a heave. This is a shot from Kyrie.
Busted. A little fade away from three. No, not there. Ball's on the floor. Stanley Johnson's got it. And the Pistons have a chance. No timeouts. Gotta hustle it up. Reggie Jackson looking for help. 2-1. Jackson, the three, short. Game over. Cavaliers win. They sweep the Detroit Pistons.
Stan, what did you see on that final play? MC contact or what?
We'll let the league comment on that. Either you guys can comment on it. You saw the game as much as I did. You've all got DVRs. You can watch it and comment on it. You want me to comment on it so I can spend another $25,000. You guys saw it as well as I did, so write what you saw. I'm proud of our guys, especially today. Look, I told them, I've been on the other side of being up 3-0 in series. Usually what happens when you're up 3-0 and you make a run like they did in the third quarter, the team dies and goes away. And we talked about it for 2 days. And our guys stayed in the fight.
Refs need to have some type of system in line for necessarily no fines, suspensions, being fired. Same thing that happens to us. Make bad plays. You're not really being productive to the sport. You know, I think you should have consequences just like the players. So,
do you think it's fair to say that the most important thing that you can do this summer and for the team this summer is for you to improve the free throw shooting so that you're on the court at the end of games?
You think I sit around all day and not work on it? It's obvious, right? Next question.
We understand what we all want. We understand what we want individually and what will help the team. First of all, we're going to Kev a lot in the post. We want Kev to continue to be aggressive, put pressure on the defense, and we want Kyrie as well to be aggressive on pick and rolls, and when he's able to get his shot, we want him to take it. For myself, I play off these guys, and tonight obviously was a prime example of it.
Ariza trying to find some room. Curry falls down and grabs his right leg. Curry asking for help to get up. Fell awkwardly and immediately grabbed his right leg, and you see him hobbling right now.
Zalunich went down. It was a wet spot. Curry looked like he slipped on it.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to a Monday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. Did you get an idea of maybe what flavor we're going to have for you this afternoon right here as we get your work week started? Yeah, it's going to be NBA heavy, and that is an outstanding thing. I think we would all agree. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about today. I'll tell you what, Jim Cushion, by the way, put that montage together with expertise, as always. I got to tell you, Jim Cushion, what a weekend for the folks in the CLE. What a weekend for the folks in the D on the other side. A pair of broom jobs. Indians, Tigers, up three, down three in that order. And then, of course, the Cavaliers finished off the four-game sweep of the Pistons. Kind of a rough weekend, I guess, to be a fan of the Detroit clubs.
Yeah, for Detroit teams, it is what it is. Sometimes these funky bad weekends happen. The Tigers are messing around with an injury or two, and they're making a few moves, but they should get a couple guys back. But first time the Indians sweep the Tigers in Detroit, and I think it was 8 years, because we know how much the Tigers in recent years have dominated the Indians. And then on the flip side, you have the two playoff games, the Friday night game 3, and then last night's game 4. Still rattling around, by the way, in my brain, Bob, why it is that the schedule makers decided to put the West games first yesterday and the East games later. Whatever it is, but the Cavs ended up getting the sweep there. So, yeah, if you're a Cleveland person, it was definitely a fun weekend. If it was a Detroit person, it's a weekend you're going to want to forget.
The Pistons' 12th straight playoff loss, by the way,
that ties
the
record.
Cavaliers. That ties an NBA record. You know who had it or who else shares it? It would be the team that just fired their coach today, by the way. The Los Angeles Lakers, who fired Byron Scott today for not getting anywhere close to the playoffs in his 2 years with the Lakers. Of course, they beat the Sonics. The Lakers did 12 times in a row in the playoffs from April 23rd of 80 through May 14th of 1989.
Basically a whole bunch of first-round series in the 1980s with Showtime Lakers and the once-upon-a-time Seattle Supersonics.
And it's weird. I don't want to get off on a tangent here because I want to talk about the Pistons and Cavaliers. We are going to talk about the Tigers, who are just in a major slump, and the Indians they lost when they won. Because
yep.
Carlos Carrasco went down with a hamstring injury, and he's going to be on the DL for a while. But anyway, the Tigers lost, the Indians won. I want to get into all of that stuff. And also, Johnny Mandel under indictment in a Texas courtroom. That's right. Finally, the hard partying leads to illegal activity, criminal activity. And now it's not just damaging a property in a hotel room either, but actually assault, misdemeanor assault. We're going to get into all of that too. But just briefly, don't you feel bad for Byron Scott? I do. I don't think he's nearly as bad of a coach as his record at the end of his career is going to show that he is. He had to coach the Cavaliers after LeBron James left, during those awful, awful, awful teams in which they won like 22 games or 23 games or whatever it was a season. Then he went to the Lakers in the middle of their rebuild and quite frankly, their decimation. Injuries to Kobe last year, the retirement this year as he can't do it anymore, the young roster made over in much the same way that the young Cavaliers roster was made over in the wake of LeBron. And Byron Scott drew both of those jobs, Kush. He drew both jobs, and I don't know what his career record is going to show, but it's going to be horrible, far, far worse probably than he really ever was as a coach.
It certainly negates what he did at the beginning of his coaching career when he led the New Jersey Nets to back-to-back East championships in the wake of the decimated East right after the post-Jordan era. So it's certainly going to even that out. And, the one thing, here's the one fun part, especially if you're a Cavs fan on this one. Which job for Byron Scott was worse, this one?
Or the three
years he spent with the Cavs, because the one thing that pops into my head is sans Kobe, Kyrie Irving was probably the best player in these last two stints that he got to coach.
No question about it. And Kobe, of course, wasn't there last year with the Achilles. And then this past season, when he realized he doesn't have it anymore and he can't play. And most of the year he was horrible. So, yeah, I really, really feel badly for Byron Scott. His career coaching record, in case you're wondering, let me see if I can pull it up real fast. Yeah, his career head coaching record, including those championship teams, those Eastern Conference championship teams that you mentioned with the Nets, is going to be 454 and 647.
Ooh.
Think about that. Now, of those 647, let's just do some fast math here if I can. All right, I can't. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to fake it. I'm not going to fake it. I'm just going to pull out my my smartphone calculator.
I'm already doing
63 losses with the Cavaliers his first time around.
Okay.
Plus 45 more, plus 58 more, plus 61 in year one with the Lakers, plus 65 this year with the Lakers, 292. Oh. So let's round it to say 300 of his 450. happened in the last 5 years with Cleveland and the Lakers. That's not even right.
No, that's not right. And the problem is these last two jobs, and especially – all the criticism he took in L.A. for basically not playing the young guys, going on record saying that old school comment about the three isn't worth it, basically. Yeah. Those combination of a couple things, I don't think he's going to get hired again, though, because of those things.
It might be. I don't know. I don't want to get off on a tangent, which we already kind of did, but just to throw it at you here, he also coached 52 and 30 teams, 49 and 33, 56 and 26, another 49 and 33. He's coached playoff teams, good playoff teams, but obviously these last 5 years, I don't know. I don't care who you are. Do you think it would have mattered if Hall of Fame coach Dr. Jack Ramsey had been coaching the Cavaliers, if Phil Jackson had been coaching the Cavaliers when the best they had in 2010, 11, 12, 11 and 12, and 12 and 13, and then these last years, the Lakers. Wouldn't it have mattered when the best he had, as you pointed out, was Kyrie, and Kyrie wasn't even there for all of those because of injuries? I mean, honestly, nobody could have done that. So
No. Every coach would have had very similar results with those last two teams.
I think that's fair to say. So anyway, enough about Byron Scott. He's not a coach around here anymore. But going back to what we were talking about to start the show, Jim, and going back to talk about what the main subjects are here. This is the beauty of talking sports in Toledo, Ohio. Do you not agree? Being in the middle, you know, being that gateway right there on the Ohio-Michigan border, essentially between Detroit and Cleveland. You know, we got Detroit fans just kind of really, really, you know, kicking their dogs. No, it's just a figure of speech. PETA, shut up. But they're just ticked off. You know, after the Indians swept the Tigers. And then the Cavaliers swept the Pistons. And, of course, there's a controversy about the final play, many Detroiters no doubt feel like Reggie Jackson was fouled by Kyrie Irving. But while they're bumming, you know, Cleveland fans are cheering. And we get to cover both teams. We get to talk about both cities and all of that stuff. So it's kind of neat that we don't just get depressed and we don't get too happy. We kind of understand both sides of that coin being here in kind of the gateway or the bridge or whatever you want to call it right between the two.
Oh, I could definitely attest to that, specifically with the Pistons. I mean, I did a lot of fun little research on contracts and things late last night after that game ended because, you know, I like to think I have some knowledge of what the heck I'm talking about. And you know, these are kind of things that I wouldn't do specifically as a fan. But looking into the Pistons, I know they're bummed. In fact, if you're a Detroit fan, I'd be more bummed about the Tigers right now than the Pistons. In theory, the Pistons have nowhere to go but continue to go up.
And they will.
We've said this over and over again this season. Just get above 500, get in the playoffs. That's the progress you need to see this season. Looking at what they got, there's still a lot to like there. And really, they don't have a ton of cap space. They do have some. They have about $20 million. One of their problems is they still owe $14 million for one more year on that whole Josh Smith thing. So that's not helping. But they still have about $15 to $20 million about in cap space, and this is adjusting for the projected blow up of the cap this summer. So they still have a little bit of room to make some things happen. But their biggest thing is Andre Drummond in restricted free agency year is right now. So he's officially going to enter that phase. I'm pretty sure it won't be handled like the Greg Monroe. I'm pretty sure they'll get some kind of long-term deal. And the rest of the core of this team is locked up. So you get a couple of scores, particularly off the bench, which most times this year was pretty horrible. I could easily see this team making a next step and maybe getting to a round two next year. It's the one and only thing I tweeted late last night, Bob, about this Cavs-Pistons game four is, yes, the Pistons need to make those improvements because we all need at least two rounds of Stan Van Gundy involved in the playoffs.
Absolutely. Great stuff there in the montage, by the way, from Stan Van, wanting to keep his next 25 Gs. but back to your point, yeah. Yeah, if I was a Detroiter and doing Detroit talk radio exclusively today, I'd be really, really worried about the Tigers much, much more so because it's four straight losses, and I believe it's 7 out of 9 on the downside. Brad Ausman had a closed-door meeting. Apparently, he's going to have to open it up and then close it again for effect because it didn't seem to work. He put Miggy and Upton down yesterday because they're both slumping, and really nothing is going well. As Ausman said, you know, they're not hitting well. And they're not pitching well, quite frankly. Neither one of those things. It got so bad. Did you see BA going out there and messing with Brian Shaw yesterday, Kush?
No, I didn't see that part.
Well, Brad Ausmus went out there and to see Brian Shaw, who was on relief for the Indians, and asked the umpire to ask him to take off his glove hand or take his glove off his hand, which he did, where, of course, he saw a ring. It's his wedding ring. And he demanded that Shaw take off the wedding ring because Ausmus said he's using it to doctor up the baseball, you know, to scuff it or something.
What? And this isn't Gaylord Perry we're talking about here.
I know. So, but here's the worst part. You know, Shaw's like, all right, whatever, and he takes it off, and then he throws his next pitch, and Ausmus comes back out again and wanted to make sure it was off, as if he didn't believe him or something. So Shaw takes off his glove and basically waves his hand at him. He's like, see there, and it kind of shut Ausmus up. But B.A. accusing Brian Shaw, and there's a Vine, and it's on Twitter right now. We tweeted it, or I tweeted it, from the only place I tweet sports. When I tweet sports, FYI, for anybody who's on Twitter, they know that I do politics and I do sports. I tweet politics from my personal handle at France Radio, and I tweet sports from Sports Radio 106.5. So if you don't care about a rip about my politics, just follow 106.5, Sports Radio 106.5. That's where you'll find my tweets. And I usually sign them with BF, so you know that they're mine, from Bob France. Anyway, it's on Twitter right now. We put it out there, Jim, and you can see it for yourself. There's a Vine, and you can see very close up, BA. I retweeted it actually from our buddy Dennis, the D-man, Dennis Maniloff. You can see Brad Ausmus going out there and saying to the umpire, I'm telling you, he's rubbing up the ball. Really, really accusing Shaw of something dirty here. Not just saying, hey, he could rub up the ball here. Can we, you know, get rid of that, please? Not saying that. Saying, I'm telling you, he's doing it. And the only reason I bring all this up is, first of all, it's a pretty good video. It's real close. You know, it's an interesting Vine. And he's accusing, you know, an opponent of cheating, essentially. But secondly, because it makes you wonder, is Brad Ausmus really, really worried right now? Is he in desperation mode to the point where, again, he's losing four in a row? He's being swept at home by the Indians for the first time in, when did you say, Jim? How long?
8 years.
First time in 8 years that they've been swept in Detroit at Comerica by the Cleveland Indians. And again, it's 7 out of 9 that he's lost, or they've lost, and he's in desperation mode. Is it desperation, or do you think that, you know, he really had a point here? So the Vine is there. Watch it for yourself. I thought it was very, very interesting, but take a look at it for yourself, and we can talk about the kind of heat maybe that the BA is feeling in this very, very, very young Major League Baseball season for the Tigers. By the way, if you are scoring at home and checking the standings, which, of course, we always do, the Tigers are down to fourth now, under 500, a game under at 8-9. They are looking up by a game and a half at the Indians in third, then the Royals. And how about the White Sox? 13-6, sitting on top of the American League Central, again, at this very, very young stage of the baseball season. All right. So those are here. These are kind of your main stories today that we're getting into and want to talk about with you. Obviously, the Pistons getting swept by the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers move on. You heard some cuts there from Reggie Jackson not happy, Stan Van Gundy not happy, LeBron James feeling very good about Kyrie Irving, who has just basically taken over as the dominant offensive weapon for the Cavaliers, at least in that series. Want to get into that. We'll talk about more a little bit about the baseball side of things that we just hit. Tom Brady's suspension. Reinstated by the courts. Last year he got to play all 16 games because a federal judge decided that the NFL could not and should not suspend him because they had no proof that he knew anything about any balls being deflated or anything else. So he got to play. But of course the league appealed, and now a court says, yeah, they were right to suspend him in the first place. Tom Brady out 4 games. Is it the right call? I can tell you this, same thing I said to you last year at this time. When they first, and really right after the playoffs last year. This is ridiculous. I don't care if the football is as deflated and flat as a freaking pancake, and he wants to throw it like a frisbee. If he can throw it and they can catch it, then that's all that matters, because nobody's forcing the other team to throw with the same inflation of football. Each quarterback puts it however the heck they want it. I think it's a ridiculous rule. It did not have anything to do with the winning of their Super Bowl. It did not have anything to do with his success in his career. And quite frankly, this is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. The NFL continuing to drag the name of maybe the greatest quarterback in the history of the sport. And it depends on who you talk to, Peyton Manning fans, Joe Montana fans, but maybe the greatest quarterback in history continuing to be dragged through the mud by Roger Goodell, who should be fired for general incompetence and overall stupidity. His handling of Ray Rice, his handling of Greg Hardy, his handling of so many different guys. And now this was the one that he's taking this firm stand on, Tom Brady and the football air pressure. The guy is just an absolute menace to all that is intellectual. Roger Goodell, go to you know where.
Man.
So the Tom Brady story, thoughts on that, Kush? Go ahead.
You know, my main thought on that, especially when we put the Roger Goodell part back into it, is, man, where's Pete Rozelle when you need him? Heck, I'd settle for Paul Tagliabue at this point.
I would, excuse me, I was taking a drink there. I thought you were going to go a little longer. Yeah, I would, I would too. I mean, honestly, they need to find a new commissioner. I'm sorry. And I know the league is fine and they're happy because, if you're one of the owners who, of course, hire the commissioner, you know, the revenue is at an all time high.
Yeah.
They're fine. And it seems like no matter how many public relations flubs they have because of Roger Goodell's half baked ideas on how to run a league. And his half-baked ideas on how to enforce discipline and a personal conduct policy.
Changing the rules.
Yes.
That's still my biggest thing. Even
yeah, mine
more
too.
Than this nonsense.
Absolutely. It is just ridiculous. And yet, you know, they thrive in spite of him, not because of him. And Jim, do you know how much he makes? We had this out, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. In 2015, Roger Goodell collected upwards of $34 million in salary from the National Football League owners.
Unreal.
Who pay him. That's the job. And he is just an embarrassment at it. So they are an embarrassment of riches despite their embarrassment of a commissioner. So we can get into that a little bit. Another quarterback taking a fall, but in a different kind of way, and one that you are a little more familiar with, Jonathan Football, a.k.a. Johnny Manziel, indicted on a misdemeanor assault charge by a Dallas County, Texas grand jury. The formal announcement was today. His case was heard by a grand jury this past Thursday. He's being indicted for hitting his ex-girlfriend, Colleen Crowley, so hard that she temporarily lost hearing in one ear. She requested and was granted a protective order against Manziel that prevents him from seeing her for 2 years. She said she and Manziel had a confrontation in a Dallas hotel room, which continued downstairs at the valet station. She said he forced her into a car. A valet ignored her pleas for help. They then drove to where her car was parked in front of a Dallas bar. She said this in a sworn affidavit, so it's a he said, she said right now. She accused Manziel of getting into the driver's seat and beginning to drive. She said that when she tried to jump out of the car, Manziel stopped, dragged her back into the car, and hit her. Police said they spoke to her, interviewed several other witnesses, reviewed medical records, but they did not arrest Manziel. Instead, took the unusual step of asking the DA's office to present their information to a grand jury to see whether or not they would indict. Typically, a local grand jury hears only felony cases, according to news sources down there in Dallas County, Texas. But this is a misdemeanor assault case. It carries a maximum punishment of a year in jail and a $4,000 fine. Now, I bring this up, Jim, because how bad does that make the police department here in Ohio look, out in Avon, Ohio, which is, you know, is a suburb of Cleveland.
Right.
When almost an identical situation. Almost an identical situation. Johnny Manziel in the car with his girlfriend, Candy or Crowley or whatever her name is. Not Candy, Candace, I guess, right? Colleen, I'm sorry. Candy Crowley is the CNN news person. Colleen Crowley, same exact situation. Johnny Manziel was accused of hitting her while she was in a fight with him as they were driving on a highway. And she apparently wanted to get out of the car then too. And he according to her, he slammed her head up against the windshield. So think about all of this for a moment. Johnny Manziel at least twice now has been accused, and the Avon police decided not to press charges. This was back in October or so. Two different times he has been accused of physically hurting, abusing, hitting, whatever it is you want to call it, his girlfriend. This was on I-90 in Avon, Ohio, which is a western suburb of Cleveland. And according to the police, there was alcohol involved. And the report was that she tried to get out of the car during an argument. It was a moving car, and he pulled her and slammed her head into the windshield. Bottom line is, Jim, this is a lot more disturbing than maybe we ever thought it was going to be with Johnny Manziel. Because last week, when we, you know, we as we continue to follow the life and times of one of America's most famous celebrity train wrecks, it was a TMZ encounter in which they saw him going into another bar wherever it was in California. It was in L.A., Hollywood Hills or something like that. And he was just completely, you could tell by the sound of his voice being slurred and being, you know, all just kind of stilted delivery and goofiness. He just sounded like he was either high or drunk or some combination thereof. And we were talking about, hey, guys, it's good to see you again. I'm just here. It's going in and having some fun with my friends. And there's nothing wrong with partying as long as you don't, you know, do anything stupid, right? I mean, and I'm living with Von Miller. Von Miller, you know, Von Miller, we're just getting our act together. You know, and I, you know, overstated the slurring, obviously, just for, you know, entertainment purposes.
The Von Miller thing, though, for those who still haven't heard it, not an exaggeration. He actually claimed that.
Yeah, he claimed they were living together. Von Miller cleaned all that up the next day and said, no, that's not true.
When it comes to find out, he's been living with Josh Gordon,
yeah,
which can't be helping either of them.
Exactly. But, you know, we did all of that and talked about all of that, you know, with entertainment purposes in mind a little bit, just because he's just so out of control. And it's just, you know, and it's a sad story. But anyway, it's no longer entertaining. Because now this is not one but two different, very credible accusations, and in this case, an indictment by a court or a county grand jury of physical assault on a woman. Now, I have no idea how it went down, but all I know is if he hit her hard enough on the side of the head to cause her to lose hearing in that ear, in my mind, Jim, I'm picturing Ray Rice in an elevator. I'm picturing Ray Rice in an elevator.
That's kind of the thing that was going through my head. I mean, precedent has been set in the NFL because of at least that incident. So,
but here's where we are. We had video of that incident,
right?
Eventually. And this isn't a car. There's no surveillance cameras in somebody's car. There are some witnesses who say this, that, or the other thing, but there's no video, and that's the difference. Remember, the Ray Rice story was taken very seriously. And people said, oh, my God, you know, he can't hit. But we don't picture a hard, straight right hand when you say he hit his then-fiancée. You know, maybe an open-hand slap. Not that that's acceptable, of course. But in your mind, you don't know the gravity or the how graphic or how severe the striking was until that video came out. And that's what turned everyone's stomach. And that's why Ray Rice is out of football. For Johnny Manziel, all we know is the grand jury is indicting him for hitting her in the side of the head so hard that she lost hearing, 90% of her hearing in that ear. And I think it was temporary, but still. And is it a slap from his driver's seat and her in the passenger seat? Is it a punch like that? Instead of hitting her in the temple of the jaw that might have knocked her out, he hit her in the ear, which, you know, wouldn't knock her out, but of course could make her lose her hearing. How bad was it? All I know is strike one. And we've got problems. This is strike two for Johnny Manziel in terms of allegations of hitting this particular girl when his temper got the best of him. So it's no longer entertaining to talk about the spoiled, affluenza football player, like that affluenza punk kid in Texas. This is a different kind of a punk kid in Texas, obviously. It's not entertaining anymore. We need to start looking at him. Perhaps, and we'll see what the jury says here or how this trial comes out because he's being indicted. But we need to start looking at him perhaps with maybe the same eyes that we look at Ray Rice, the same eyes that we look at Greg Hardy and anybody else who has taken the unacceptable, inappropriate, and there aren't enough strong enough words to describe what's wrong with hitting women. And in this case, perhaps multiple on multiple occasions. So we're gonna hit that a little bit too. As a matter of fact, coming up here in a few minutes, we're gonna talk to an attorney down in Dallas, Texas, about this very case. He's gonna tell us a little bit more about what they know and about what Johnny Manziel could be facing. And quite frankly, it could be very, very bad. Chris Lewis is a former sports agent, by the way, And he's also a former contract advisor with the NFLPA. Now he's an attorney, and he's got the goods. He's down in Dallas, Texas. He's got the goods on what Johnny Manziel is facing and what the prognosis is as far as his potential return to football, or maybe his potential entrance into a cell. All right, so we'll get into all of that. Piston, by the way, forgot to tell everybody, Jim, we've got our Pistons-Cavaliers post-series roundtable.
Yes, we do.
Coming up at 4:05, a post-series roundtable, and we are going to talk with Chris Manning, who writes for SB Nation's Cavaliers site, FearTheSword.com, and then we are also going to talk with our friend Jordan, Jordan Blount, thank you very much, who writes, of course, for DetroitBadBoys.com. I lost my notes here, and you want to know why I lost my notes, Jim? This literally just passed across my newsfeed. Steph Curry, soon to be two-time NBA MVP, has been diagnosed with a sprained MCL, will miss at least 2 weeks when he will be reevaluated. Steph Curry and the Warriors and the season from the heavens for them, 73 victories, suddenly dealt a major blow as they try to defend their NBA championship. We'll talk about what that means for the rest of their Rockets series. They're up 3-1, but we'll talk about what that means because I don't know how many games they can play. Jim will have to look very carefully at the planned schedule for round two in the West. How many games could he miss in the span of 2 weeks? Would it be the entire series? Pretty doggone close to it, perhaps. Would he miss a second-round series, and what would that do to the West? My goodness gracious. That story literally just crossed my news feed, so it's breaking right now. We'll have more breaking news in our Sports Center here at our bottom of the hour Sports Center. Then we'll talk more about Manziel coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
To the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Wow, all kinds of breaking news happening right now as we continue the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're going to open up the phone lines as quickly as we can at 866-240-1065. A reminder, top of the hour, we're going to talk more NBA as we bring you a Cavaliers-Pistons kind of recap or review series aftershocks, perhaps. And there were a few, especially in that press conference, post-game press conference you heard at the top of the hour. But we're going to talk with a little roundtable. Jordan Bellano, who covers the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, and then Chris Manning covers the Cavaliers for FearTheSword.com. We're going to get into both of those guys, or talk with both of those guys at the top of the hour. But the real earth-shattering news from the NBA, literally just 5 minutes ago, Steph Curry, the announcement came. He has got a sprained MCL. He went down in a heap. Draymond Green said he was literally crying on the court when this happened. In game number 4, a game that the Warriors would ultimately win to go up 3-1 in their first-round series against the Rockets. Now we know why he was crying. A sprained MCL. It's going to keep him sidelined for the first 2 weeks, or I beg your pardon, for at least 2 weeks. And that's just to be reevaluated after 2 weeks. Jim, you just did a little bit of checking on NBA.com.
Right.
Obviously, the other series are not over yet. None of them are, except for the Cavaliers in a sweep and the Spurs over the Grizzlies. So they don't have specific dates, but the second round of the playoffs are slated for May 2nd, which may move up to May 1st or April 30th, again, depending on the end of all of the series involving the teams.
I wouldn't count on the way some of these are about to go.
And then the conference finals are scheduled to be to begin on May 17th, perhaps. Again, same thing depending on the quickness of the series, the 16th or the 15th. And what do we know about that? Well, we know that today is the 25th of April, and if you skip out 2 weeks ahead before he can, even be reevaluated at that time, that takes us to May 9th. And that could be, if the series starts May 2nd, we could be into Game 3 or maybe even Game 4 of a potential second-round series for the Warriors. And in other words, the Warriors, without the MVP, could find themselves in a very, very precarious situation.
And for those scoring at home, by the way, that semifinal possible matchup will either be the Clippers or the Blazers.
Or the Blazers. And you know how much the Warriors and Clippers hate one another.
Right now they do.
They despise one another. And I can tell you this, Chris Paul right now has got to be just, no, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, I guarantee. But my goodness, he would love a shot at the Warriors without Steph Curry standing in his way. Can you even imagine what that series would look like? That series, by the way, is 2-1 Clippers in favor of the Clippers, I should say, in Game 4 tonight, right?
Late night tonight, Game 4 in Portland.
Out in Portland. All right, so there you go. So that could impact round number 2, and quite frankly, it could impact the NBA's defending champions getting an opportunity to defend that title in the finals. All right, so that's all the breaking stuff. Now back to what we were talking about right before we heard that news. We were talking about Jonathan Manziel, formerly known as Johnny Football, now Johnny Indictment. He is going to be, or has been indicted by a grand jury, which means he's going to face charges for misdemeanor assault down in Dallas County, Texas, for allegedly hitting his girlfriend, or former girlfriend, I guess, Colleen Crowley, so hard she lost hearing, 90% of the hearing, in one ear. So joining us now to talk about this from a legal perspective is Chris Lewis. He is an attorney down there in Dallas. He's also a former sports agent and a contract advisor with the NFLPA and a member of the Sports Lawyers Association. So he's following Johnny Manziel and knows the inner workings of both the NFL and the legal system with expertise. And Chris, thanks so much for joining us. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Great to talk to you. I appreciate you spending the time. This is, you know, I got to tell you, Chris, when Johnny Manziel left Cleveland, we cover the Browns up here in the Toledo area along with the Lions. We're right in between Detroit and Cleveland. When he was here, it was entertaining, also disappointing for Browns fans to see his bizarre behavior and his constant partying lifestyle and the trouble he would get himself into. It was more entertaining for a lot of us after the Browns cut him and he was no longer the Browns' problem. Now it's not entertaining or anything else. It's disturbing because we're talking about at least two allegations, one in Ohio and one down there where you are, of hitting his girlfriend, the same girl, Colleen Crowley. What can you tell us?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's facing a lot of issues from a personal standpoint, from a professional standpoint, and I would put number 3 from a legal standpoint. And I don't think that one's nearly as bad as the professional and the personal. What's happened, my understanding is, and I know this is going to happen because if he was no billed, then that would have happened last week. He's going to be indicted on a misdemeanor assault charge for that incident that happened down here. Now, this spells bad news, I know, for him personally and also for any discipline he might receive from the NFL. I think proving the case against him beyond a reasonable doubt from the criminal perspective is going to be a much bigger challenge.
Now, this is a misdemeanor charge, as you just pointed out, and the story that I read earlier on this afternoon said that, typically speaking, the grand jury doesn't get cases unless they're for felonies. So how and why did this go to a grand jury for being billed or no billed?
Well, one of two reasons why. Either, number one, it's a very weak case, which now it's making it sound like maybe it's not. But if it's a weak case and you've got someone that's a celebrity, then occasionally, and this doesn't happen very often, the grand jury is reserved for felony cases to determine whether there's probable cause that case should go on. It's available for misdemeanor cases. It's just never used because the DA's office can do a direct file of case without having to go through an intermediary of sorts. But it's either a weak case or it's because it's Johnny Manziel. He's a celebrity, and no matter what decision the Dallas Police Department made, it would be the wrong decision. Either, hey, we're giving him too much credit for being this star, that's why we didn't file the case, or the only reason you're filing this case is because it's Johnny Manziel.
We're talking with Chris Lewis, who is an attorney in Dallas, Texas, and, of course, that's where Johnny Manziel was indicted by a grand jury in Dallas County. You know, I'm curious, especially given your sports background with the NFLPA, to kind of figure out how the league is going to deal with this. First of all, he's not in the league. He's not on a roster. He's hoping, he said about a week ago, to play in 2016 after he gets his quote-unquote issues sorted out. Then, by the way, like a day after that, he was spotted at another nightclub out having a good time as he sorted his issues out. But if he did, let's suppose for a second that there was a team that wanted to bring him in right now. This is a league that has just been reeling from domestic violence cases and the bad publicity that comes with it. The Greg Hardy case, women's groups, and quite frankly, men, everybody. I was outraged when the Cowboys were allowed to sign Greg Hardy after he was convicted in a court of law in North Carolina for some horrific abuse of his girlfriend. And then, of course, we all know the Ray Rice situation, how badly it was mishandled by Roger Goodell and the league's front office. So, you know, domestic violence is at the forefront for the NFL when it comes to PR. And here's a guy who's been accused not once, but twice in very, very similar circumstances. One in Avon, Ohio, in which police investigated her trying to get out of his moving vehicle while he was slamming her head into the windshield. And now she's trying to get out of a moving vehicle, and he's hitting her in the side of the head and causing her to lose her hearing. How do you think the league, if he did want to get back into it, would even deal with this?
Well, I think that he would have a very difficult time. So you have the Ray Rice incident, and yes, it was handled wrong. Ray Rice was a superstar in Baltimore. You have the Greg Hardy incident, and, you know, they were able to do some legal maneuvering to where he was ultimately not held criminally responsible for that. But Greg Hardy was a superstar. So now they've got the benefit of all these mistakes that have occurred, and there's no doubt that this has been an issue, and there have been a lot of other issues with Johnny Manziel. I said the other day that the problem with Johnny Manziel is, you know, with a lot of people, they'll make a mistake or they'll receive some negative publicity, and then you'll have enough time that's passed where other people screw up or something else occurs. People tend to forget. He's not given anybody the ability to forget what's going on. And look what we've seen recently. We know that Nike's dropped him. We know that his good friend and agent, a person that he knew from the very beginning at Texas A&M, Eric Burkhardt, has dropped him. We know that, speaking of Greg Hardy's repped by Drew Rosenhaus. Drew Rosenhaus has not dropped Greg Hardy, despite everything that's gone on with his career and in his personal life. Yet he gives Johnny Manziel an ultimatum, and Johnny Manziel, I don't even know if they lasted a month together, but he gets fired by Drew Rosenhaus. So he's got a lot of issues, a lot of personal issues, and probably a lot of things that the league knows about that we're not privy to at this point in time.
You know, his personal issues, that's spectacular what you just pointed out. I did not realize Rosenhaus represented Hardy. I knew when he fired Manziel or essentially dropped him or discontinued the relationship or whatever after that ultimatum, that spoke pretty loudly. I did not know that he was repping Hardy, a guy who was actually convicted rather than Manziel, who's only been accused. But I guess it's just a pattern here with Johnny Manziel, literally, that didn't start with his drafting. I mean, essentially, from what we're understanding, and you're down there in Dallas, and I know that's not exactly where A&M is, but it started in college. I mean, he had been a hard partier, and excuses were made for him, no problem, as long as he played well on Saturday and didn't actually break the law. Nobody really cared. And when he got to the NFL, he just thought it was a continuation of college. But now it's graduated from hard partying, being irresponsible and immature, to being criminal, if indeed he is convicted, criminal in the abuse of this girl or of his girlfriend or whatever it is you want to call her. And so, I mean, he's a train wreck. Can you imagine any of 32 NFL owners or general managers wanting to bring this guy on board again? Do you think he's done?
Yeah, well, you asked me that, and I'm sitting in Dallas, Texas right now. So, I mean, I can probably imagine one by the name of Jerry Jones, but even I think enough has happened at this point in time. Jerry's always been enamored with Johnny Manziel. He was at A&M. We've heard stories about in the draft room, his son Steven and the other Dallas Cowboys personnel just agony. We cannot take Johnny Manziel here. And now they're looking like the geniuses. You know, you would have to have somebody like a Jerry Jones that was willing to take a risk like that, but nothing is going to happen in this upcoming season. I think he's going to have to show, the same way he's shown a pattern of making just, very, very bad decisions, I think he's going to have to show the same type of pattern of getting help. We're probably dealing with a substance abuse issue. This isn't somebody that is just wrecking his career because he decides to make bad decisions. I think there's something else going there. His dad's even stepped up and says he doesn't think he's going to live to his 24th birthday unless he gets a lot of help.
Yeah.
So I think that you're going to have to see at least a year of good decisions and a person getting really a lot of help and getting right before anyone is willing to pay money or to make them part of their organization.
Would he even have the opportunity? Can the league suspend him before a conviction? Could they just say,
sure they can. Know. Yeah, yeah.
So how
their standard. Well, so the NFL is not bound by the standards of criminal law or whether or not there was a conviction or whether or not a jury found somebody guilty. You remember they received all of the pictures from the Greg Hardy incident, and Greg Hardy was eventually vindicated. And then they, after the fact, they received all these pictures that showed that no doubt what happened was that he committed an assault, and maybe, I don't know whether he should have been found guilty or not. That's a completely different standard. But certainly there was enough there for the.
Well, but he was. But I mean, the bottom line was he was. It was a bench trial, and he was found guilty, and there was nothing to indicate that any of the things that she had alleged were made up. So I mean, you know, and didn't Jerry Jones take quite a beating, no pun intended, of course, by the public whenever they signed Greg Hardy? Women's rights groups and everyone else were outraged. I can't imagine him wanting to do the same thing, you know, with a Manziel.
No, and I don't think that he will. I think if you would have, let's rewind this a couple of months ago, there was a lot more interest and there was a lot of, that story was getting a lot of traction down here. But the things that continued to happen, and I believe the incident with Johnny Manziel here in Dallas may have happened in January or so. But prior to that, there was some talk about Jerry being interested. But I don't think at this point in time anyone gets close to him. And yes, the NFL can suspend him because the NFL, you got to remember, they're worried about their product and whether or not there's conduct that's detrimental to the league, the same thing that teams have. And that's not a criminal standard. That's something far less. So, yeah, I mean, I could – not that any team would touch him, but even if they did, I think the NFL would step in and suspend him.
I would certainly hope so, because you know what? The last thing anybody needs to do for Johnny Manziel is hand him $5 million. Hand him anything else to go and continue his path of self-destruction.
And if, you know, we all hear about enabling all the time and how parents do it sometimes.
Yeah.
He has been constantly enabled. And he's a great athlete. He did great things at A&M. He was a superstar. He was very marketable. And he's gone, and he's literally thrown all that away. And the enablers that he's had, I think, are starting to abandon ship at this point in time.
Yeah, this is a bigger crash and burn from perhaps a higher place than even Ryan Leaf, who's a great example of it. And there are others, of course, but since he's a quarterback, he just kind of jumps out. And Leaf's been to prison and had all kinds of problems with his own issues.
Sure.
And Johnny Manziel, you know, he wasn't as high of a pick. Obviously, Leaf was number two overall, but still, being a Heisman Trophy winner and with all the celebrity that comes with it, my goodness. You know, he was dropped for crying out loud by LeBron James and his CAA, Creative Arts Agency, from any representation they may have done for him too. I mean, everybody who's been close to him, from friends to business associates to agents, and obviously teams now with the Browns cutting him, everybody is turning and running from Johnny Manziel. I would be stunned, to be honest with you, Chris. I would be stunned if he ever took another snap.
I agree with you.
Chris Lewis, great insight and analysis down there from in Dallas. We certainly appreciate the time. Chris, again, as an attorney and a former sports agent, for goodness sakes, you're the perfect guy to talk to. Please keep us posted whenever any new news breaks on the Johnny Manziel case.
I sure will. Thanks, guys.
We'd love to have you again. Thank you, Chris. All right, there you go. Chris Lewis from Dallas, Texas, joining us for an update on Johnny Manziel, who has been indicted on misdemeanor assault charges down in Dallas County, Texas. All right, we're going to take a timeout. On the other side of the timeout, we're going to come back and get back on point on the NBA. The Steph Curry news, we will kick around with our guests, no question about that. Jordan Ballon, Chris Manning, both going to join us from the Cavaliers and the Pistons, respective SB Nation sites. We're going to do a little post-mortem, if you will, on the series that was a sweep by the Cavaliers. But we'll also talk about Steph Curry's situation. What does that do to the West? Does it make the Spurs the new favorite? I can tell you this, the Vegas sports books are changing instantaneously. I'm watching it happen before our eyes. They are not going to take any more bets until they find out exactly, or they weren't as of about an hour ago, until they find out exactly what's going on with Steph Curry. And does this make the Spurs and or the Cleveland Cavaliers the new favorites in the National Basketball Association to win the championship? So all of this, so impactful. We're going to talk about it with our guest coming up next, and hopefully you as well, at 866-240-1065 on the ticket.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.